Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is January 4th, back in the swing of things, back in the studio. Feels like winter out there as well. Snow in the forecast. It's a chilly, cold day. Multiple layers today. It's kind of a little cloudy. Sun's starting to come out, but, you know, it's kind of hard to get back into the swing of things when it's cold, it's dark, it's dreary. We've had a few days to relax and or to enjoy time with family and to reflect on God's word and the gift that he has given us in his son, Jesus. And now it's back to work, back to school for many people today. I know for my family, it's back to school, back to work for the rest of the family. I've been back for, a day now to a regular routine. Had a little bit of a routine during Christmas, but now back to the regular routine. How about you? Is it challenging to get back to that routine? Well, we have our friend, Dr. Jack Fiennes, to help us out today. We're going to talk about that with him, getting back to our normal after the holidays. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo. Joining us by phone this morning, our friend, Dr. Jack Fiennes, clinical psychologist. How are you this morning, Dr. Fiennes?
I'm doing fine. You ought to be more happy. It's actually heading towards spring. You know, we've got 12 more minutes of sunlight since Christmas. You know that, don't you?
Yes, the daylight is getting longer. You are correct. And yes, I appreciate that greatly.
So even though it's cold outside, you get to see more of it.
That's right. So Dr. Fiennes, did you have a nice Christmas?
Oh, yeah, very much so. In fact, yeah, exactly 2 weeks ago, we were having all kinds of Advent services and Christmas parties with the grandchildren, and they had a Polar Express parties down in St. Louis. And so, yeah, there was a whole bunch of stuff going on. It was very positive, very, very positive. And obviously, Christmas itself, the birth of the Savior, singing angels, and all the various things we did. And quite frankly, that's one of the problems or really issues that a lot of parents, a lot of families are facing now, is they get to the back to the what I call a dull normal, and what do? I mean, really, we're sort of underserved a little bit by the church calendar because we have this great fest of Advent, and we have the great fest of Christmas, and we're waiting for Epiphany, but there's really no filler now. It seems like no filler until we get to Ash Wednesday and Lent, and so we went from this basically high of great happiness and joy in the church. And now we're like, oops, what are we doing now? We're sort of like on a train going somewhere where we don't know where we're going. And many times the kids are all wound up with what happened. The parents are trying to restrict them back to being normal, whatever that normal is. And things have just become rather dull. D-U-L-L, dull. It's sort of a dull time of the year for many people. And unfortunately, that's exactly the time of the year when you talk about cold and weather and stuff. Seasonally affected depression happens because it's getting lighter, but it is dark and cold outside, and so you're not seeing a lot of Merry Christmas lights right now, and you're not seeing a lot of Salvation Army people ringing bells out there. It's basically just dull.
Well, it is still Christmas until Friday.
That's correct, and I think that's what I want to focus on. You know, we sort of skip over a lot of terms. We use them a lot in the Advent services, Christmas services. You know, we use the word Emmanuel. I'll talk about him in a second. Yeah, we talk about the fullness of time. We'll talk about that in a second. But, we skip around a lot of things. And we hear, Mary was a central focus to a certain extent of the mother of Jesus, a central focus of a lot of manger scenes, a lot of inspirational writing, et cetera. But she did something that was rather interesting. What did Mary do after the birth of the Savior? Any idea?
After the birth,
what did she say she did when everything was said and done before the wise men showed up? What did she do?
Now I'm going to have to go back and read the text. I was thinking
she took her gold from the wise men to Macy's and bought a new house. No, what she did. You know, that's an interesting question. I would like some theological experts eventually to tell me what she did with that gold. You know, because my feeling is when we went to Egypt, Joseph put a tent up and she went to the Marriott Hotel. I'm not sure, but anyway. Because she had some extra cash. But what I want to focus on is what did Mary do? And Mary is a model in terms of what we might want to do during this time. It says in Luke 2, I don't exactly know the exact reference, it says she pondered things in her heart. Mary pondered them in her heart, okay? And that sort of passes in, passes out, and we it sort of applies to us during this new normal, dull normal, whatever season, whatever you want to call it, Because the question is now, for the listeners or anybody, how many of you are actually pondering what you just went through? I mean, and what does pondering mean? And if you take a look at that word, I think the Greek is enthumai, and that means you basically put things together. You sort of organize yourself together, and it basically relates to the fact that you try to get a very firm behavior and understanding as to what just happened to you, okay? It's not trauma, it's not shock, but certainly, wow, you know, we just went through Christmas. This guy shows up named Emmanuel, which is God in us, and we've got a whole bunch of different changes that have occurred to us. And I think instead of being left out, and here comes the joke, being left out in the cold and on this train I'm talking about that we don't know where it's going, we are actually, the train is going exactly where it wanted to go. It's traveling with Jesus in charge, traveling us right to the right direction. But I think we should spend less time worrying about what we're doing and more time being merry as we're pondering all this in our hearts. I mean, there's some very significant things that happened here over the last 10, 12 days or something like that, that a lot of people just sort of, once you put the stockings away, once you put the tree away, once you put the nativity scene away, once you put the Advent wreath away, it's all of a sudden, oh, we're back to normal. The house looks the same. The tree's no longer there. Kids or grandkids, whatever, are gone. The cooking's done. What's next? And I think we need to take a really good look at, let's say, Galatians 4, where he says, when the fullness of time had come, okay? And what does that mean? That means that everything, this time of the year, is the fulcrum of history. This time of the year is when everything was supposed to happen and did happen. And it's not so much just a historic statement, but take a good look at what happens there, and you keep reading Galatians. If you take a look at that, you notice that it says that from this point forward, we can talk to God personally. We can now call him Abba, A-B-B-A, Abba Father, like Daddy or something like that. And so right now, the thing to ponder is our new personal relationship between God and us. A new personal relationship that is not established by us. We had nothing to do with it. He chose us. But all of a sudden, everything scintillates from this point. So if we would take, I love Advent services, and I really do love the light, lighting the candles and singing songs with the grandkids and stuff. But I think it'd be really important if we had post-Advent or post-Christmas services, okay? Pondering services in the home, where you can sit down and say, okay, guys, what exact first two things? Number one, what just did happen? What does all this mean? And number two, how do we put it in verb form? How does it change our lives? Because I can guarantee you that Joseph and Mary changed their lives after that. I can almost guarantee the shepherds did. You know, the wise men, how many there were, they did. Herod did. A whole bunch of people changed their lives because of this, okay? But what does it do to us? And I guess the question is, if we now have a personal relationship with God the Father, we call him Daddy, and then we have a new personal relationship with our Savior, does that mean anything in our lives? Does that mean we should be happier? Should we be more joyous? Should we be more respectful? Does it mean we should be more planful? What does that mean? Should we just go about our normal life going back to being dull, okay? And I think if you take a really good look at a lot of the words that are used, like in Galatians 4, and you look at Mary with the pondering, you'll all of a sudden see that it's what's sort of required, or not required, but what's implied is a change in your life right now. So it's not dull, but so it's really not back to normal. It should never be normal again, because God has unnormalized relationship.
So getting back to normal certainly involves spending some time pondering what God has done for us all in Christ Jesus.
Exactly. And I think the phrase in Galatians, and Paul Meyer talks about, like, the fullness of time, the enormity of that, that God took so many thousand years, name the number you want, but so many thousand years getting the empires, the world organized, transportation system organized, the verbal system, the communication system, everything organized so it'd be perfectly natural for this to occur, and actually perfectly supernatural for this to occur, to upset the norm. And I think the question is, do you upset your normal life because of your pondering on what happened on December 25th, okay? And if the answer is, I'm not going to upset my life. I'm just going to go back to work and just drink my coffee and complain about the Bears or whatever, you know, watch football or whatever, then you haven't done it. Then you've just gone back to, you've just normalized your life. And what I'm saying is your life ought to be unnormal from now on, because you ought to be more strong against going for sinful things. You should be more worshipful. You should be more devoted to the church, more devoted to your wife and family. The wife, everybody should be more connected to each other, the more fellowship, koinonia, because all of a sudden, this huge system of life, which is normally dull, has been upset. The apple cart of life has been upset. And the apple cart has been upset because, you know, quite frankly, the inn in the manger scene you have, that guy was having a perfectly good day, and then all of a sudden a baby showed up. I mean, the guy that owned the hotel or owned the inn. The shepherds were having a perfectly good day out with their sheep. Those are temple sheep, according to Paul Meyer, and they were going to be sacrificed in the temple. But these shepherds showed up with angels, okay? Then these wise men come from everywhere. Everything got upset, and it's designed for upsetness. It's designed to create a huge kaleidoscope of different experiences. And what people need to do is ponder these differences, place them together. That's what the word means, place them together, and figure out, what does that mean to me? How does that change my life? And it's interesting, if you just take a, and I'm not going to get too preachy on this, but if you take a good look sometime at, let's say, Psalm 1 or Proverbs 4, you will see that in those two circumstances, the questions to you is, how do you change your life? How do you make your life different? How are you going to live from this point forward, especially Psalm 1? And if you take a good look at those things, the question is, well, you're pondering, when you gather this stuff together, what just happened to you at Christmas and Advent, what are you going to do about implementing a new change in your life? And then that strange word comes in, metanoia, which is a Greek word for change of mind. Has the Christmas season made you understand who you are in terms of God's forgiveness and why God did this, okay? Because he didn't have to do this. We don't have to have a Christmas, okay? We don't have to have all this stuff going on in the church. He did it because he wanted to, because he loved us. And that's huge in terms of, you could say, the fullness of time. What would motivate us to do that for somebody else? And that's it, pondering in our heart what happened to them.
So this, what does this mean, Jack? What does this mean for children? You know, as we talk about this for adults and all this pondering, this thinking, what about for children who have gone from all of this, well, nearly chaos during Christmas of, you know, no regular schedule. The regular schedule's probably gone out the window, but also all the unusual things that happen during this time, in addition to the joy of getting to attend special services and music and those types of things. There's all the family gatherings, the change in diet, I'm sure, that happens during that time. And then for families that do Christmas presents, whatever amount of Christmas presents they do, that still can be, well, that can really change the whole scenario. I know for our three-year-old, this was the first year that he really paid attention to what was going on with presents, and that kind of threw him off one of the days. Just he was out of character for the rest of the day because it was just so different than usual. I think he was a little overwhelmed.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, you talked about possible chaos. It definitely is chaos. But then that's, you know, you got toys and presents and bows and wrappings and noise and Christmas carols going on. There is a lot of that going on. There is a tremendous degree of chaos there. But you see, let's go back to life experiences, okay? These kids are all going back to school now. All four of my grandchildren are back in school. I can guarantee you there'll be attitude issues between kids. There may be some bullying going on, maybe some stealing going on, maybe some, maybe not treating people well. And you see, that's when you make this application. And you say, okay, today if Charlie or whatever decides to be a bully to somebody, and your kid comes home and says, well, I was bullied by Charlie, or somebody's made comments about somebody, like negative comments at school, or they didn't get their teacher and they didn't get along, what's your first, your normal response would be mad, cry, fit, throw a fit, whatever. But what is pondering in their heart what Mary did, what does that do for your change of behavior? It means, what did God do on that day? That's, he sent his forgiveness into the world. John 1, okay? And in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and John 3:16, he came to forgive people, okay? And so basically you're asking your kids to say, instead of reacting violently, and reacting negatively, instead of reacting like a normal person would do, be unnormal. Be what Jesus would want, which is a fellowship with Abba, the Father, and be quieting, be forgiving, be loving, and get out of your character and be a different character. Be a character of forgiveness and hope and connect with that person who was a bully. Connect with the person that lied about you. Connect with the person that said bad things about you. Connect with the person in a forgiving way. And so it's a direct application for kids, not so much like, okay, calm down, you're back to school, and oh, you better behave yourself, but how am I going to forgive my neighbor and combine with them because God forgave me?
So what can we do as parents to help our kids get back into that routine, going from, maybe sleeping in over Christmas break and now time to get back to that school routine and be ready to be up and ready to go to school on time and being able to be alert enough to do homework in the evening or whatever activities or chores they have in the evening and stay on top of those. Just getting back into that regular routine after a Christmas break like that.
Well, I think two things. First of all, on the spiritual side, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to have parents out there say to their kids at night over if they have their dinner or whatever, maybe before their soccer game, what are they doing these days, indoor soccer, whatever they're doing, you say, let's take a 5-minute moment here, or 10-minute moment, and talk about what does it mean? What does it mean to ponder these things? What does this mean? Christmas should have changed me? How am I changing my life to do this? So you take a moment of that spiritual reflection. Number two, you start organizing things so your life has been somewhat chaos. You start reestablishing the fact that the goals for the next few weeks is to get schoolwork done, get up at certain times, brush your teeth at certain times. You go back to get away from some of that somewhat relentless freedom we've had and go back and sort of enjoy life yourselves, but enjoy it within the boundaries of what's expected or what needs to be done so they can get back to maturity and get back to education. You talked about kids and grandkids, toys and stuff. My grandkids, we got a toy Sherman tank, I guess you call it, a remote control thing. And they take great joy, if you will, in coming over to our house and chasing my wife around with that tank. And it's not very fast, but still runs. And shooting her with these little toy, they're not bullets or anything, but they don't anything, but they're quite attracted to chasing my wife around the house with that, make noise. She screams and yells and loves it, you know, so sort of fun. Also, they also try to go after the cat with them. The cat went upstairs and went to bed. So. Cat had enough of the tank. but no, I think that setting up, there was a guy named Steve Covey once, a friend of mine, and he wrote a book called First Things First.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very good book. He was an LDS guy, but a very good book. And it talks about, in terms of prioritizations, sit down with the kids and say, what are our goals and accomplishments that we need to do for this week? And then you set up a day-to-day plan as to what need to be done, hours, organizational things to do, et cetera. Number one, keeping what Mary and Joseph are pondering in our hearts, let's make sure we don't forget the impact of Christmas on our lives so we tend to love and forgive other people just like he loved and forgave us. Number two, how do we become effective in our lives? What do we do to get things done for school? What do we do to get things done for church? What do we get things done with the family? Keep my room clean, whatever. And let's move forward with keeping the first things first.
What about getting back to work and being productive at work? You know, the going from, maybe sitting around on the couch, snacking all day, to going back to work and being productive at work. We've talked about helping kids get back into the routine to get back into school. But what about for us adults when it's time to get back to work and be productive?
Well, I think you have to ask yourself the question, why do you work? Of course, the immediate answer is you work to earn some money. But in actual point of fact, the whole concept of work is energy. That's if you take a look at the word work, the idea of work comes from a lot of words in physics and stuff, and it means to apply energy to get something done. And quite frankly, there's a lot of work over the holidays. My wife cooks up this Italian food we drink or eat called Sugo sauce, and it takes 3 days to prepare. And then, of course, me, I'm the dishwasher, so I'm working constantly because the more she prepares the food, the more people eat, the more I got to work. So there's still some work from the holidays. But in general, what you do is say, now, let's see, work requires effort, requires force, it requires energy, it requires direction. And the question is, you see, God was at work in us during that pondering part of Mary, and his work was just beginning. See, this is sort of, we sort of see Christmas sometimes, it was, you know, the Christmas tree and all that, and the manger scene, and then we sort of put it away and forget about it. But that's when he started working in our hearts and started working in the world and started working in civilization. It changed us. And what we knew then, said, oh, wow, if that's what he did to us at Christmas, And that was the beginning of work on earth for him. Then what do? In our work, we begin our own work with joy and cheerfulness. And we go at it not just to earn money, but to have an effect on society and do whatever we do to help people. And your role at KFUO to save people, to get the word, the grace out to them. But in our daily work, where we're working in America, to begin to show people that I can produce my good works, or not good works, but produce good things that can help other people, and do it with joy, and don't do it with dullness. Do not be dull, be happy. And I like the one that the word a lot of us use called efficaciousness, you know, being effective at what you're doing, you know, and be mindful. Carol Dweck at Stanford called it being mindful what you're doing. It's almost like the word pondering, being mindful what you're doing. So whatever you're doing at work, you're doing it not just because you have to, or not because you're paid for it, because it's going to make an impact on the world somewhere.
Now, earlier you mentioned the amount of daylight. You know, during winter we have such short hours of daylight. It's the days are certainly getting longer, but in terms of daylight. But tips for helping us get through these gloomy days when it's time to get back to work and it's so dark out. It's dark when you go to work. It's dark when you go home.
Well, I think what you do is you turn darkness into light, just like exactly what we talk about in church. And then we say, guys, you know, you can actually look at the how dark it is and say, guess what? In 2 weeks, it's going to be lighter this time. In 3 weeks, it's going to be much lighter. In four weeks, it's going to be almost bright, you know. So what you do is you focus on the fact what's happening in the future. And then what you do, I tell you, in this day and age, with all the kind of stuff that we have, from Netflix to music you can listen to, Pandora and whatever, if you can't find something to do to occupy yourself, to distract you, I mean, can you imagine what it would be like to be living in the first century when there was nothing to do except play around with cows and sheep? I mean, nowadays, if you get depressed about those holidays or get depressed about the light, you got all kinds of things you can get into. For that scriptural reading off the computer, you know, about interpreting things and taking a good look at stuff, Googling things, asking questions. There's all manner of things that are available to people today to distract them, from the darkness, distract them from the lack of hope, and aim them toward the future. And I said, what I do is tell people, find your resources in your house. Find where you got your tools. They may be focused on biblical and spiritual things, or they can be focused on fun things. Find puzzles and find things you can do, and focus on those things. Don't worry about what the sun's doing. The sun will be the sun, the moon will be the moon, and you just take care of yourself. And I guess a big question for all of us, will the Cubs win again this next year? If you want to ponder something for your heart, ponder yourself, how the heck did that happen, you know? Especially if you're a Cardinal fan.
Now, what are you doing in this 2017 that, are you doing anything new? What did you do to help you get back to your routine after a little Christmas vacation?
What I decided to do last week, I threw the hospital in a tizzy because I had some surgery exactly 1 week ago. And I'm not a big, I don't conform to a lot of things. And so what I did is I decided to, when they bring you back from surgery, you always have a blood pressure cuff on you, you know, and I hate that thing, you know, because it takes your blood pressure like every 2 minutes. So I just took mine off. I guess I forgot it was connected to the computer system of the hospital. And immediately they had a big red chart coming in because they're sure I died or something, you know. Of course, I was in there eating a pizza that I ordered, so it wasn't quite the same thing. So I decided to upset the apple cart a little bit that way. But I'm getting back to work thinking that I'm very happy that the surgery all went well, meeting all my friends, getting things done. And quite frankly, having a lot of fun on KFUO.
Well, we're glad to have you here, and hope we'll have a chance to catch up with you in the new year. Tips on what we, daily things that we could do or things we should be reading to help us out in getting back to that routine this year with just about 2 minutes left?
What I would do is I'd take a good look at the word Emmanuel, okay? What does that mean? If God is in it, God is in us, or God is with us, what does that do to us? What does that mean when we take a look at Romans 8? What does it mean that says that nothing can hurt us? Because God is in us and he's already charted our way for us. What does it mean in Luke 24? Take a look at some of these things. Luke 24, we always skip Luke 24. We look at the resurrection, but we notice that Jesus' role in Luke 24 is exactly the Isaiah wonderful counselor thing. He's got two of his followers that are very depressed and very anxious about what's happened over there. What happens in Luke 24? He's walking with them to Emmaus. Walk with Jesus, take the walk with Jesus, and start reading some of these things, these action verbs, these action behavioral things, and find out what it is he's done for us and how does that affect your life.
Spend time in God's Word, a great way to get each day started, and we certainly offer that here at KFUO throughout the day. You can listen live as Pastor Fisk starts the morning off with his time and the daily lectionary, but all those are available on podcast as well. You can listen to and download things like that. Our program's here to help you start your day as well.
I think you say help use KFUO to ponder God's Word.
That's a great idea. Use the resources here at KFUO to help you ponder God's Word. Well, thank you, Jack. Always great to spend some time visiting with you. I hope that 2017 is a great year, a healthy year for you. And thanks for the tips helping us get back to our routine after this little Christmas vacation.
Well, I tell you what, the people that are really suffering right now with the nurse that took care of me last week, I think they had almost a nervous breakdown themselves. they came rolling in. I was at Papa John's Pizza, so it was sort of funny, actually. God's blessings, everybody, and let's hope both the Cubs and the Cardinals win.
Thank you. You too, Jack. Take care. Coming up in just a little bit, more faith and family. We're going to revisit a story, a beautiful story of why I chose life. Talk with a family in California about why they chose life for their son as we reflect on the gift of life that God has given us, especially during this month of January. Tomorrow, we'll check in with some of our friends who are attending the LCMSU Liberty Conference in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
25 years ago when Life Issues Institute began, our first project was to do research to find out how Americans viewed the pro-life movement. Out of that came our new message of love them both. It neutralized much of the venom from radical feminists, focused attention on both mother and child, and has been responsible for saving countless lives around the world. So I was pleased to see Ireland's pro-life group called Pro-Life Campaign kick off the Love Both Project to protect their Eighth Amendment, safeguarding the nation's unborn babies through a referendum vote. During the project's launch, women who faced unexpected pregnancies testified to the blessings of loving both mother and child. Please keep Ireland in your prayers as pro-lifers gear up to win this important battle.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Are you a rostered church worker with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? As a financial partner with the LCMS, we understand your unique calling and desire to stay focused on ministry, which is why you can look to us as a faithful partner when it comes to your financial needs. Our borrowing solutions allow rostered church workers and ministries to expand their spiritual work now and in the future. Learn more at www.lcef.org.
Do you enjoy using good old snail mail? Writing a letter, a postcard, or using a typewriter to do the same? Why not send Worldwide KFUO your letter today? Our street address is Worldwide KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. And just a click away, 24 hours a day, you can find our contacts page at kfuo.org.
New Year's Eve has come and gone, but in the church, the season for dancing the great dance of love and grace is still carried along by the good news of Christmas and Epiphany. And the music you'll hear on the next Sing for Joy is full of that happiness.
Sundays at noon on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Since 1973, citizens of the United States of America have murdered 55 million people. How? Abortion. What are you going to do about it? This January 2017, thousands are going to march for life. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Life 360 Conference will be taking place in, with, and under this most necessary event. Find out more at lcms.org/life. My name is Pastor Jonathan Fisk, and I'm going to be there. Will you?
During Advent, Christmas, Pentecost, Lent, Easter, or regular time, Worldwide KFUO is here providing God's message of salvation through Christ alone. Our LCMS ministry has been spreading the good news since 1924 in all seasons. Whichever season sparks your interest, please consider giving to continue our ministry. If you have questions about giving, you can always email us, gifts@kfuo.org.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. Joining me by phone this morning, Ellen McLattery. She's a member of Messiah Lutheran Church in Danville, California, a mom, a wife, and she's got a beautiful story to share. Ellen, welcome to Faith and Family today.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you with us this morning. I'm looking forward to sharing your story, which recently appeared on the Lutheran Witness blog online. If you go to blogs.lcms.org, you can find Ellen's story on there among many other great stories. But when I read this story, first of all, I had to get out the tissues, but then realized, man, this is a story that I really wanted to share here on Faith and Family. Let's share the story of the McLattery family. Tell us about your family, how you met your husband, and the little bit of the history of your family.
Sure. So I am a nurse. I'm a NICU nurse, and I live in California and took a travel nursing assignment in Michigan to spend some time with my extended family. And while I was in Michigan, I met my husband, and we dated for a few months while I was in Michigan, and then I came back to California, and we dated long distance for a little bit, and then he followed me out here, and we got married on the one-year anniversary of our first date.
Uh-huh.
And we have a beautiful daughter named Emmeline, who is 3.5, and then when she was about a year and a half old, we learned we were expecting again, and we were thrilled and so excited, and at our 12-week ultrasound, we got the news that the baby looked like it might have something wrong with it.
Hmm.
So that was understandably really devastating.
Yeah.
And we really wrestled with, do we do further testing? Do we not do further testing? We met with our wonderful pastor, Pastor Ledick from Messiah, and just prayed and talked and wrestled with the decision. I think coming from a pro-life background, I'd always thought, oh, well, there's a risk with a miscarriage with an amniocentesis. I would never do that. But really in talking with our perinatologist, the high-risk pregnancy doctor, that technology has really changed over the years. Mm-hmm. Ultrasound is so much better than it used to be. That he said that he's done thousands of amnios and never had a miscarriage as a result.
Wow.
So we felt comfortable proceeding with the amnio after wrestling with it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So at 16 weeks along, we did the amnio, and at that ultrasound, the doctor said that he saw some more markers consistent with Down syndrome. So we waited, and about 10 days later, we got a phone call from a genetic counselor letting us know that the baby did, in fact, have Down syndrome. We found out it was a little boy.
You mentioned that before you weren't even sure if you wanted to do further tests to find out. I imagine that would be a struggle, because on one hand, I'm sure you want to know, is there something I can do to help this child? And you just want to know so you can start planning too. What can I do to help this child?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Along the way, were you ever faced with the question, whether it be by others outside your family or those providing medical care for you, were you faced with the question, do you want to terminate your pregnancy?
Absolutely. I think we were very lucky in that I work with a lot of these, my doctors, being a NICU nurse. So
sure.
I think that I don't know if I had a different relationship with them than another person may have, just you know, coming off the street, but I was very clear from the start that my husband and I wanted this information for planning purposes. Mm-hmm. As a NICU nurse, I know that it's nice to have a plan in place for high-risk pregnancies and for deliveries. Mm-hmm. But I said from the start, you know, this isn't because we would consider terminating the pregnancy, but because we just want information. And so even though I was very clear with the doctor and the genetic counselor prior to the amnio, and when I got the phone call, the genetic counselor gave me the option to interrupt the pregnancy, which I thought was an interesting euphemism. Mm. And, you know, I said, no, that's not something we would consider. And I really didn't get the question much thereafter. I talked to other moms who really got a lot of pressure saying, well, this is the best option and you don't want to bring a child like this into the world. And we didn't face that. And we have very wonderfully supportive family and friends who share our worldview, and that nobody suggested this would be a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your article, you made a great point. You know, as you bring it up now, you know, what is the best thing to do? Should you bring a child into the world who has Down syndrome or any other kind of difficulty, any other challenges or something that's going to be a hardship for him or her throughout life? And I love how you responded to that. I love your response to that. You know, if none of us were going to face, you know, if none of us should face suffering, then, well, none of us should even be born.
Yes. That was exactly my take on it. I think there are no guarantees in this life, and everybody faces challenges and difficulties. And I'm so thankful for a faith that tells me there's a reason for those difficulties, that mm-hmm. it's for a purpose. And I think it's really arrogant to say the challenges of Down syndrome are so great that it's not worthy of living life. So,
but this child doesn't deserve to live because he faces so many difficulties. That is so arrogant for us to say that.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. Most studies show that people with Down syndrome are very happy with their lives, that they like their appearance, they really enjoy their family and their friendships. And so I think really what it comes down to is parents are very afraid, and I really can relate to that. When we got the news, I was terrified and devastated, and but I don't have any personal experience with people with Down syndrome. I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. So I do think that people kind of couch it in, well, this is what's best for the child, but I feel like a lot of times that's maybe a little disingenuous or not being honest with themselves. That really, it's very scary as a parent, and people think that they aren't cut out for it.
So what did you do once you learned that your baby had Down syndrome, it was confirmed through the tests that your baby had Down syndrome, that your son had Down syndrome, and you were fully intent on and being his mom, being his parents, and carrying him to term. How then did you start to prepare for that?
Well, we cried a lot and prayed a lot, and there are some great books out there. I connected with some people online who have kids with Down syndrome. I happen to have a dear childhood friend who has a son with Down syndrome. So I called her that night, and she actually said, oh, I wish everybody could have a baby with Down syndrome. And it wasn't what I was really ready to hear that night, I have to say. But since then, I've really come to appreciate what she had to say. And I've gotten to meet her son, Liam. And she lived across the country, but actually just moved to California. So definitely connecting with people, getting more information. And really, you know, we grieved for a long time that Samuel wouldn't be typical. And he also had heart defects and some other health issues. So we knew that that was coming, and we knew we were going to be facing open heart surgery. So it was a difficult year from the time of diagnosis to post open heart surgery, certainly. But
Now, how soon after birth did he go into surgery?
He had about a week in the NICU when he was first born, and then his surgery was when he was between 3 and 4 months old. And then he ended up developing another heart issue that he had another open heart surgery right after his first birthday.
Wow. So from before he was born, you knew that this was going to be difficult. You knew that there would be challenges, that there would be some suffering along the way. How did your husband handle the news when you found out that that your son had Down syndrome, and how did he prepare for this?
He was wonderful. He was very concerned about me and how I was doing. He certainly had his own fears and questions as well, but I think the Lord was gracious in that we were able to handle that together and process that together. I think it was similar for him, you know, reading information, talking with people. He was teaching music at the time and happened to have a student who was older and had a son with Down syndrome. So, you know, you just find these little connections mm-hmm. along the way that I think are very encouraging.
How about the rest of your family, your extended family? How have they been a part of receiving the news and learning and growing and preparing for the challenges you would face?
You know, it was difficult news for everyone. I think that some people were able to respond in the moment a little better than others in terms of, you know, sharing their own feelings of disappointment or shock or grief. But overall, everybody has been so supportive. And now that Samuel's here, everybody loves him so much. He's just, you know, everybody's joy. So we're grateful. We're so grateful that we have families who share our faith and share our outlook on mm-hmm. life matters.
What were the things that you were afraid of, you were worried about before he was born, and how have those been addressed now that he's born and been through the surgeries? What were some of the things that you feared beforehand, and how do you see them now?
Wow, there were a lot of fears. I don't even know where to start with those. There were so many. You know, first of all, just worried that was he going to live, you know, with... Mm-hmm. With the heart defects and open heart surgeries. And so, you know, I think it was in some ways almost hard for me to fully bond with him while I was pregnant. And then even those first few months, I loved him tremendously, but there was this fear of, are we going to have him for a long time? Or is he, you know, going to not make it through the surgery? Or how will this play out? And just really having to trust that God has all of our days numbered, and that, you know, he would just give us the grace to walk the path that he set before us. So I think, you know, first of all, the fear of would he live, and then also what would his life be like? Would he be able to read and, you know, function in this world, and how would society, you know, embrace our son or not? And I think that we've come such a long way in terms of understanding Down syndrome, and there are so many more therapies and tools available now to help people with Down syndrome reach their potential. They're in mainstream classrooms with AIDS, and people with Down syndrome are doing wonderful things. There are even some colleges that have post-secondary school opportunities for people with Down syndrome. So it's an exciting time, really, to live with Down syndrome, in terms of they used to just be put in institutions or shut off from society, and it's not the case now.
Your son is very much so a part of your family now. Now, tell us about, you mentioned you have a daughter as well.
Yes.
Tell us about the relationship between your daughter and your son.
Emmeline is just a little spitfire. She's got so much personality and so much energy, and she absolutely adores her brother. I have been saying since he was born that, you know, probably his biggest risk in this life is being smothered by Emma Wine just out of love. So she has loved him from day one. And, you know, at 3.5, she doesn't really see the differences yet. Samuel is very delayed. He's 19 months old, and he doesn't crawl. He doesn't stand. He doesn't walk. He just sits if placed in sitting. You know, two open heart surgeries certainly have compounded his delay. So to him, to Emmy, he's just still a little baby, really, because he's not running around and chasing her, stealing her toys yet. But
soon enough.
Yes. She is fiercely proud of him and protective of him. And we haven't even really had the conversation with her yet about Down syndrome or what that is, because she just doesn't even see it yet.
Sure. Well, you said Samuel's 18 months old now?
19.
Yes. 19. Wow.
Yeah.
I have a son about the same age.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we were going through all of those different stages probably pretty close.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's probably why why your story was it hit home for me is, you know, just those questions that come up during pregnancy and the what ifs and how will I do this? I think for me as a new parent, how am I going to, you know, am I going to be a good dad? Am I going to do these things that I want to do? Or, you know, I want to be a faithful parent and do all the things that God has given me to do, and I want to do them well. So many questions that we face as parents. And then not only do you have those, then you add the questions that come up with something that you've never faced before. As you mentioned, you didn't know personally someone with Down syndrome or who had had any experience with that. And I can't imagine the questions and challenges, but it sounds like all those questions and challenges are being answered. And it sounds like in a very positive way, as you're learning about the resources and so many things that can be helpful to you and your son, your whole family. You're right. We've come a long way in terms of resources to help, including education. Not too long ago, I learned about Concordia University, Wisconsin, and Bethesda communities, Bethesda Lutheran communities. They've partnered together, and they have Bethesda College of Applied Learning for individuals with developmental disabilities. So you're right. The day after day, there are more opportunities coming available, and it's great to hear.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Where do we go from here? What does day-to-day life look like with Sammy?
Well, it's a lot of appointments and therapies. Mm-hmm. He, as I said, is quite delayed. Really, even for Down syndrome, I think the two open heart surgeries certainly contribute to that. But he has physical therapy twice a week. He has occupational therapy. He has speech therapy. He has a little bit of an oral aversion where he doesn't want to eat food. So we're looking at possibly a feeding tube in the near future. So there are a lot of health issues, and individuals with Down syndrome don't always have so many health issues, but they certainly are at risk for a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So he's been in the hospital with pneumonia and ER trips for croup, and he certainly has a lot of medical appointments. So I think for now it's kind of getting him through these early years where hopefully we can address a lot of these health concerns so that he's able to live a full and happy life. We're just kind of trying to take it day by day. So I think about, what will school be like and where will he go to school? And I have to kind of stop and say, you know what, today we're going to think about his physical therapy exercises and what can we do to help him, you know, start crawling. So trying to take it day by day.
Taking just one day at a time instead of letting a whole bunch of days pile up on you at once, huh?
Exactly.
When you meet someone, when you meet a new parent or someone who's expecting and they have questions, you know, what would be your words of perhaps encouragement to someone who may find themselves in the situation you were in, learning during the pregnancy that something isn't necessarily happening as planned, that perhaps something different is going on, that their child may have an illness, a disease, or a condition, something that's going to make life different than it would be for, as you said, a typical child?
I think that I would want to say that it's okay to grieve. Mm-hmm. I think that people can sometimes feel like if I acknowledge the grief that I don't love my child, and that's just not true. But, you know, when you find out that you're expecting, you have all of these hopes and dreams for your child, and it really is putting aside the dreams that you thought you had, and you're grieving that, and then coming to find new hopes and dreams for your child. And that takes time. It takes quite a bit of time for some people. And then I think for Down syndrome specifically, I think something that somebody said to me that I just really clung to when I was pregnant was she told me, you know, when I look at my son, I don't see Down syndrome, I see my son. And I just cried when she told me that, because I think that there really was that fear that all I would see was Down syndrome. And, you know, I think for sometimes people from the outside looking in, when they see Samuel, they see Down syndrome. They don't know him. They don't know anything else about him.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get to know him, it's just a small piece of who he is. It's not defining or all-encompassing. So I think, you know, for somebody who were to receive a Down syndrome diagnosis or any other challenging piece of news about a baby they were expecting, just that that's not the whole picture, and that's not who your baby is. It's a piece of what's happening, but there's so much more than just a medical issue or a condition or, you know, whatever's going on.
Tell us about Samuel's personality that's developing and growing. Tell us about Samuel, who this whole person is.
He is such a happy little guy. He loves music. He loves, he just kind of sits and bops to music, which is adorable. And he has a great sense of humor. He just loves to laugh. And he definitely is happy to sit and take things in and watch. I think, honestly, some of his developmental delays are that he's just so happy to just sit and take things in that he's not motivated to try to crawl, because he'd rather just sit in my lap. But he loves people. He loves his dog. He's just a happy little guy.
When I hear a story like this, you know, the John chapter 9 comes to mind. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him."
I love that passage. I remember reading it and appreciating it before Samuel, but it really does take on more significance to me now, and it's so encouraging that this isn't something random that happened, that it's not something that we caused. It's just part of God's perfect plan.
That in him God might be displayed.
That's right.
Ellen, what a beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing your story today. Thanks to your family for making arrangements so that that you could be on the phone today. I know that you all have a lot going on with all the therapy that Sammy attends to, and so I appreciate all the help from your whole family today so that we could share your story. Thanks so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.